IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 93 of the Killing It Podcast, and our first podcast of 2021. We made it.
Yay! Hey, we totally survived 2020. Everything is good now.
Everything is perfect. It's all completely reset.
Exactly. So I saw a fun thing somebody put on that fake Christmas picture on Facebook, which was their family all gathered around, and in the background there were these bolts of fire coming out of the sky. I'm like, oh, okay, well, there you go. We survived 2020.
Because, you know, that that whole phenomenon of the New Year's resolution. Oh, I'm going to be a completely different person as of Friday. I'm not yet. I'm not going to be different until Friday, but check with me on Friday, and then I'll be a completely different individual. It's almost as if the world has been doing that, like collectively holding their breath and saying, oh, no, everything's fine tomorrow. I don't have to do anything different today to make it better. Meanwhile, I was noticing all of the port closures in the UK. You know, if you guys have been following that, entirely pandemic related, not Brexit related. And I was like, man, the people in the predictions business, this is a hard year.
That's a tough gig.
Everything that was gonna
happen. Guys like us?
I know. People in the predictions business.
It's a tough gig to go out there and go, I have a reasonably educated reason to believe that the following 17 things will happen. And then you come back a year later and go, so that all those other 17, they were real. That one thing, I didn't see that one coming.
Like, well, you know, you don't have to be perfect. You just have to be right more often than you're wrong. So, and I'll throw it, before we dive in, I'm going to throw out my thought on this. Is like, look, I've been cautioning everybody to be super careful in 2020, the first half of 2021, because I think we got a lot of choppy waters. But there's light at the end of the tunnel. I know, because I watch on my Facebook feed, legitimate people I know have gotten the vaccine. Like, friends of mine have got pictures of a needle going into the side of their arm. Like, I can verify that these are people I know that have gotten it. So that actually,
well, you know, right. Like, and trust.
Right. Now, so, they haven't all been in healthcare, but hey, it's.
I will say, I don't know how you guys feel about the, one of the good things to have behind me is a month of being a prognosticator of like, oh, you know, it's December, so now let's get on yet another webinar and predict what the world's going to be like.
Oh, I spent all of December doing that. So I'm very glad to move into 2021 now. And now we can go back to, like, I'd like to talk about what's going to, you know, specific things that are happening versus like all my projections on what I might have. You know, those are fun.
Back to the business of actually doing things as opposed to talking about maybe thinking about perhaps one day considering doing.
I do have one more prognostication coming up, and that is my State of the Nation address for SMB IT is January 14th. So I would love to have everybody go.
People should listen to that. Carl Smarka.
He knows
last
stuff.
Last year, Dave did a counterpoint, like, oh, so let me just give you my analysis of Carl's analysis.
I might have to do that again. We'll see how this all goes.
But, you know, that is
how we dive in that.
All righty.
That is how the analysis industry works, right? Somebody's got to give the first analysis, and then everybody else just analyzes the
analog.
All righty. Let's dive in here, and I will take the first topic for today. As would be apropos of the finished season, it was a really good season to be Jeff Bezos, apparently. And not just Jeff, but everybody else who's involved in the business of e-commerce. Yes, it was a tough year. And yes, the economy has been hammered in certain segments. But, and we'll link to some analysis on this particular topic so that you guys can dive in and do some more reading. The 2020 online holiday shopping season, phenomenal growth. Now, I do know, being, you know, living where I live and doing what we do, I know many people who actually work inside the walls of Amazon. And one of them made a comment to me that he's like, it's as though we went to bed one day in March of 2020 and we woke up with the spreadsheets of December 2021. It was 18 months of growth all at once. The question is, flash in the pan, or is this a sustainable shift in the way that people shop, and will we see those numbers continue to rise? What Ooh, says me, you me, guys?
Me. I have an opinion.
You so, in the back with the opinion.
Me in the back with my hand raised on a podcast. You can't see it. So the answer for me is, oh, it's totally a shift. And the reason is that, like, it was trending this way before. We just lit fire to it. Now, do I think some of that will roll a little bit back? Yeah, I do actually think a little bit will roll back, because there are certain shopping experiences, retail experiences that you like having in person that are more valuable, particularly experiential shopping or the idea, certain things that you do, luxury items you want to handle or examine beforehand. But there's a whole bunch of things that are just commonplace, everyday items that are like, oh yeah, that stuff, the convenience of online is now sold. Everybody gets it. And it was already going that way. Right. So I think a lot of it is here to stay.
Well, and some companies like Sears and Penney's have been going that way for 15 years.
Right. Like,
so it makes perfect sense that it is a long-term trend, although there'd be some bounce back. I mean, this is going to be actually the thing that prognosticators are going to have the hardest thing with in 2021 is, will it bounce back 70%, 80%, 20%? You know, where do you stand on this one? So the number, the big number, Forrester says, is $173 billion. That's a bunch of change. And the good news is a lot of people have learned that not only can they return this stuff, but you get it like instantly. I have way overspent my Amazon budget, because every time I turn around, I'm like, oh, do I want to go to the store or just click a button? Right. I don't need socks today. It's not like my last sock is gone. Right. So if I'm going to order something, I don't care. Same price, easy shipping, blah, blah, blah. So I think much of it is here.
Yeah, I think that is the angle, right? There are shopping experiences that we like to have in person, and then there are things about the online that are negative. The real point of innovation is going to be in the area of returns from online shipping, right? Because if you think about it, to click a button and have it show up, as long as it's the right thing, as long as you got what you wanted to have, brilliant. I love that, right? I want to be able to do that again. But then when the shoes are a half size off or the pants do not look the way you thought they were going to look, oh man, now I got to go back and send those things back, and I have to redo the whole logistics process. I can vouch for, again, phenomenal advancements in technology in the returns process. I think that's good.
Right.
I think the downside here, right? Where I see the downside in this topic is that it's heavily slanted in favor of the very big boys. Those already.
Oh, absolutely. Well, the interesting thing is, if you are smaller, you make some specialty product, but you sell through Amazon, you have to have the same return policy. Tony Hsieh passed away a couple months ago, and you know, he really invented that with Zappos, right? The ability that, you know, you can buy 12 pairs and return 11 of them, and we don't care. Because the truth is, most of us don't return most of this stuff. I will say, just this is something that, you know, the idea that struck me very heavily bringing this into the IT space is, if you have not yet built a store for your clients, I think this is the perfect time to do that. I think every IT consultant out there could have a store where they go to clients and say, you know, our preferred, whatever, Q1 laptop is pre-configured. Go click the button. It shows up, and, you know, you can either ship it to us or ship it to you, and we will hook you up. And same thing is, here's our preferred, you know, our cables, our cameras, our microphones, whatever it might be. And that way you basically say, look, part of why you buy from me, this has always been the case with consultants, you buy from me because I'm going to make sure you get the right thing. I'm not going to say, oh, here's a $39 firewall. Trust me, you'll be fine.
or Or the opposite of that. Here are 39 firewalls. Right. Knock yourself out. Yeah,
you need a firewall for every desktop.
Use the one that you, as an amateur who has no insight into this, you think that this is the best thing. No, they're paying for the expert advice. See, I think that's where my real action item out of this topic goes to is, will we continue to have phenomenal online shopping growth? Yes. Tons of money favoring the big boys, and there's going to be application. But what will really make the difference here is when we can finally, what I will call mass market or democratize the access to really advanced technologies, right? The local providers, the integrators, the solution providers, the managed service providers of our world need to find ways to say, you know, Amazon can do X, Y, and Z, phenomenal advanced technologies. But me on my little store, well, I don't know how to do those things. That's the area where if we are to have any opportunity to push back against this like Amazonization of the entire retail world, if a local company is going to compete, they will have to adopt really cool advanced technologies. They don't know how to do that on their own. That's you. That's our audience that needs to go in and do that.
You also have the ability to say, you know, I mean, depending on how much work you want to do, you could create a page for each client and say, you know, that printer up in front, the one that we call, you know, whatever, Darth Vader, these are the toner cartridges for that. You don't have to look, you don't have to investigate, you don't have to check the numbers. You push this button and your toner is going to show up. And I promise you, it's going to be the right thing. The other thing is we certainly have the ability to put together Amazon stores, right? And eBay stores and so forth. So, you know, it could be, this is really an opportunity. I don't know that anybody's kind of built a platform yet. This might be something that we do in our spare time.
Exactly. Your other job.
my other job.
But right, see, that's very the thing, good. Right? I think it's fascinating, and I do believe we saw the future in this past season. So now let's move on to our next topic.
And Dave says, spectacular crash, be right back.
When he froze like that, I was like, it would not at all be a surprise when, you know, servers go down and shit like that happens. So,
all right, spectacular. So like, it was like I kid you not, it was a flash of light, and then like everything went away.
Nice. Did the lights go out? The electricity?
No. Like clearly my machine had some kind of weird kernel panic thing.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, we just finished without you, and it was amazing.
Show's all done.
It was awesome. Yeah. It was totally awesome. But it will be totally transparent to the audience because you had already done your piece on topic one. And then now
you finished topic one, because I wanted to take it to building a store, building a store for your clients. I want to have some comments on that. Did you finish that?
Yeah, we did, but I'll be happy to edit if you want to throw something in.
Because I do. I actually think like there's a huge point that I want to throw in there.
And Ryan's already said, and now on to our next topic. So
you can just go back and
do your thing, and I'll figure out how to make it.
Let me throw that in, and then I will transition.
We continue to record, so yeah.
Okay. All right, so I can't not talk about this for a second, because I think one of the big things, and I don't have a great answer on this, but I think solution providers, IT services firms, need to be thinking more about their own digital stores. I think the ability to buy services online is going to be more and more a real thing. And I'm going to hear a lot of wailing and a lot of complaining from people going, oh, it's a relationship business. They can only sell it in person. And I'm going to laugh and go, I don't think so. Like, I think you're going to be able to sell a bunch of your services through a cart where somebody provisions what they want, including your services on your online store. I'm not saying this is a fully baked idea. I'm not saying I'm like throwing everybody out there, but some first movers are going to win on that one. All right. Let's move into the next bit then and talk about, is there any good news for solution providers in 2021 in cybersecurity? It's like, there's nothing been happening in this space at all.
Yeah. Quick answer, no. Topic number three.
guys, where's your take on this? Because, you know, we know a lot of things around cloud misconfigurations have been a huge issue. We know that there's the work from home stuff handing out there. And then we've got lots of old security architectures. Is it going to get any better this year?
I would say if there's good news, it is that people are paying attention to us, and that you don't have to be embarrassed to tell your clients, we need to tighten security. And because you don't even have to say that you've got a problem. You just say, look, if they can break into this, you know, the top agencies of the federal government, they can break into you. So we're just going to notch this up. But, you know, we're going to point to an article where, you know, the predictions, as we mentioned, are not great.
Well, and I think that is a legitimately positive spin that a local service provider can put on it. The silver lining here is you are, again, mission critical, right? If 2020, one of the fundamental takeaways that I had from all of the haywire chaos that we all survived, the good news out of 2020 was how rapidly and surprisingly seamlessly industry and business and white collar and all of the knowledge work in our industries just went home and continued to function. Everybody said it could never be done. And then the industry did. And we all looked around and went, whoa, that was better than we thought that it was going to be. Not good, not seamless, not actually fun, but the industry responded. And I think that the reaction to that was, oh God, it's a really good thing I have a trusted technology partner who could help me adapt in a moment to that kind of disruption. That same philosophy now transplanted into 2021 is going to be, it's a really good thing I have a trusted cybersecurity partner, not just a vendor with a tool, a local service provider who can help me with these things. But as we've said a number of times before, when we've talked about cybersecurity, tools are nice, solutions are good, local adaptation, implementation, and real-time management of that stuff is the only way that it'll ever get fixed. Because Dave, to your point, it is remarkable how many of these massive vulnerabilities weren't a flaw in the tool set or the platform or the technologies. They were a whoopsie by a staffer or a service provider who just forgot to go back and update that thing. Duh.
Yeah, see, maybe I'm Debbie Downer on this one, but I'm hopeful that there's going to be serious regulation and management of this space now that people are more aware of it. But we've got a long history of there not being enough kind of quote unquote penalties for this. I mean, one of my predictions that I made on Business Attack was, you know, I think criminal negligence is coming for somebody.
Yep.
At some point soon. I think it's going to need to get in a way worse before it gets better, because unless the consequences are significant, it won't change.
Yeah, except you're right.
We also have to remember there's a big swath of this industry that I would call, you know, lazy bastards. And sure. They allow the rest of us to make money because we can go in with the almighty checklist and say, hey, have you got this? Have you got this? Have you got this? Are these things in place? You know, in the cloud services in a month. You know, I finished that book with how do you document your cloud offering? Because if you don't, I think that we're going to see news stories of people saying, oh, my IT person left or died or retired or whatever, and I don't know where my domain is, and I don't know where my data is, and I don't know where my backup is. I don't know where my email is, and on and on and on. And all of that lack of knowledge and documentation is a security problem.
Oh, look, don't get me wrong. The lazy bastards are what allow the rest of us to make money. Like, I mean, but what I'm just sort of getting at is that I do think that there's more of a drag than a lot of people are willing to admit to by allowing that to continue. Sure, it's profitable for best in class or for the top portion of the industry, but I think there's a drag on the industry as a whole that by allowing that to continue to just happen, sure, it may be good, but I think we're actually slowing down other portions of our ability to implement because of this.
See, I 100% agree with that. I have said for years, cybersecurity is a communicable disease. If my systems are locked down, rock solid, everything is up to snuff, and then somebody else sends me an email with an attachment that I think is a trusted business partner, and then they don't have secure systems, now I'm the one who has the problem, in spite of the fact that all of my legacy systems were up to date. I do believe it will require a negative experience in order to get most people to spend the money to do this thing different. But to draw a corollary to a different industry, have you ever seen the show Mike Makes It Right? Or do you know who Mike Holmes is? He's a Canadian renovation expert, right? Do a little Google. Mike Holmes, one of the most fascinating humans in the world. And he's actually what I believe, he's the godfather of the renovation industry, right? Like, and he exists because when he goes into a home, somebody's like, well, you know, we knew we needed to get this done. And then we looked behind the cabinet and we realized, oh my God, they didn't fix anything. They just duct tape and Band-Aids and they kludged it and sealed up the wall. And there's just a legacy of phenomenally terrible contractors. And then good ones have to come back in and make it happen. Legacy systems implementation and the dependence on yesterday's best practices, I think there's going to be a tremendous amount of spending in updating everybody's local security capabilities. Great opportunity, but somebody's going to have a
real I will say once again, the almighty checklist is the way to do that. And another great example is work from home. Yes, we were super successful getting everybody to work from home, but how many of those people are now quietly using their for free Dropbox or some other service that is not approved, right? So first of all, there needs to be an approved way of moving data. And then there needs to be some way to verify that that's the only way data moves, and so forth and so on. I mean, I think that cybersecurity holes are everywhere, and, you know, pretending that they're not isn't going to do us any good.
This is where my thinking is starting to really change on this, because Carl, like, I mean, you know, not that I don't think you're wrong. I just am not sure it's achievable to think about, like, oh, I'm going to lock this all down. I think what we actually have to do is more to an inverse. Like, we need to understand that stuff happens, and our company is only allowing access from machines that meet minimum standards. And if that other stuff happens, you get blocked out, versus trying to think this way of controlling it or locking it down. I think we're going to have to sort of flip the model. That's my thinking of the way zero trust rolls out, is by doing it that way. We're like, okay, if you're known to have those extra pieces of software, I just don't allow you to talk to my corporate network. You can't, or my corporate cloud resources, or you know, right. Kind of thing.
And I think you're right, because part of it is, it's one thing to say my 42 employees, I can figure out how to manage them. But when I connect to your 42 employees, Ryan's 42 employees, I don't have any control over what you do. I only have control over where your system touches my system.
Right. And so we've got to minimize that contact and find a way of just sharing just enough of the right stuff. I mean, you may use collaboration tools like a OneDrive, Slack, like that kind of stuff. But that's where my head's at on the way this is going to change.
So I'll finish it up by coining a new acronym, because we don't have enough of those, right?
Yeah.
Thank you. I will call it the modern digital STD, the security transmitted diseases.
Wow, we're going
looking
there
forward to that in 2021.
Welcome to the new year, everybody.
If it's not scary, people won't do anything about it.
We begin the year on a high note. So topic number three, we're looking at growth of renewable resources. And, you know, solar power in particular, not just as it pertains to mining Bitcoin, but just in general, has just absolutely taken off. And I think this is interesting because it has an effect on so many more things. So recent research shows about 75% of capacity growth for electricity will be in renewable. So that's solar, wind, and water over the next 3 years. That's gargantuan. And the one obvious loser is coal. Like, when you look at bringing new power plants online and taking power plants offline, the absolute winner is solar. The absolute loser is coal.
Wah, wah.
I mean, it's not super shocking to anybody, but I think that part of what people don't get is our capacity for electricity is growing so fast at a time when our use of electricity is skyrocketing. And so growth is actually exceeding usage. And that's pretty impressive.
Well, and that change, I will observe, is not going to happen for the popular debatable reasons of either it is real or it's not in the environment, and are we poisoning things and whatever, do you care about them, but the animals, right? That's not going to be the reason why that change happens. It will be raw fundamental economics. And as we discussed on a show just a few episodes ago, the radical decline in the cost of renewables, both the systems and then the electricity that is generated by those things, the industry has achieved generational advancements in terms of the financial advantages, the availability of these kinds of systems. And they are not like cuddly environmentalists. They are raw bean counters. And that's why this thing is going to go. But like you said, the technological advancements inside of that shift are absolutely stunning. I think the more I read about some of the new generation capabilities, the transfer capabilities, the storage capabilities around these renewables, it's incredibly exciting to me, right? For those of us who sell things that use electricity, it's always healthy to remember none of those cool things can happen without electricity, right? If the power goes out, doesn't matter how advanced your server is or how whiz bang your software application is. If power ain't there, nothing happens. These advancements are remarkable, and we will all benefit from that advancement in power generation.
This is one of those areas where anybody who is a free market kind of person needs to remember that if you're propping up an industry with subsidies, for example, an older industry that needs to go away, if you're still propping them up, you will not accelerate that transition. You will delay things. You know, I'm the regulation guy, it seems to me, but because I want to have healthy conversations about what we need to do to guide things the way they go. The market's clearly speaking, right? Where they have a need, we're achieving it at a better cost. We need to make sure that our regulations align with where the market's growing. We're not actually slowing the conversion down. Now, I will always point out that, you know, I save people, not jobs. Like, we need to make sure that we're thinking about the people in those industry, in coal, in older industries, and we're helping them transition, the people, but we don't have to worry about the quote unquote, the job or the company. Like, that needs to respond on its own.
Right. Yeah. And actually, you know, I only brought this up. I'm not very interested in the conversation about losing those jobs, because there's hardly any of those jobs left. So I feel sorry for those people, but all the people who made a living shoveling coal into locomotives lost their jobs about 100 years ago, and they found other jobs, right? I mean, I'm not too worried about that. I also think it's interesting that we have this explosion of things like LEDs, where we're able to light all of our houses and do all of our amazing things with a microscopic amount of electricity compared to what we were using 10, 15 years ago. So we moved to compact fluorescence and then to LEDs. When that move is complete, it will be dramatic how much less electricity we require for the same amount of light. And then once all of that's in place, the basis for a light-based network will also be in place. So I think, you know, I'm always a technologist. I always think that technology is going to do some miraculous things. The question is, how do we make money on this? I've been preaching for, I don't know, three, now almost 4 years, that IT professionals ought to be getting into more of the lighting business, because as long as it's IP controlled, we should be getting our share. And I've seen very few companies actually make that move.
Yeah, there's a whole ecosystem around commercial integration, lighting, home automation, all of that kind of stuff. I look at my sort of history on quote unquote convergence, which has been used on several industries. And I laugh and go, I got that one wrong multiple times. So what for me might be an obvious area of them coming together doesn't oftentimes play out with that. I will always code it out by saying, hey, smart people can cross two or three industries and really knock it out of the park by differentiating that way. Look, I think that's still an opportunity, but I'm skeptical on a broad coming together of those industries, despite for me it being completely obvious.
See, but I will take that as a continuation of one of the things that I've been predicting as a big deal into 2021, which is practical use cases of the Internet of Things, right? Because that's exactly where that technology resides, Carl. If it is network connected and it is digitally managed and it's on your network, you ought to be the one who's in charge of managing that stuff. And hey, by the way, sell them the product. You'll also make money in that exercise. But in the spirit of, you know, where do we go from here on this topic? Could we all have a conversation at some point about if we can radically enhance the way that we generate electricity and we can dramatically improve the efficiency with which we use it, can we fix the grid in between? I swear the inefficiency of our grid are not just mind-numbing from a technologist's point of view, the waste and inefficiency that we deal with, but I swear it's going to become a national security issue because we basically leak 50% of all of the power that is generated in our nation. And if we can't fix that thing going forward with technology, we fix the inputs, we're working on the outtakes. How about the machine?
You're tangential to my whole infrastructure broadband conversation. Like anybody who's been listening for a while knows that I keep beating on the fact that, you know, broadband sucks in the state. Like, and you've got to think about these things as investments. Like we have to make infrastructure investments, power, internet. Like these are important infrastructures and they open up markets. They accelerate the ability to deliver services. People too often look at this and say like, oh, it's an expense. I don't want to spend on that. I don't want to be taxed. It's like, no, we're trying to open up markets. We're trying to create new economic opportunity.
I do think that that's the tipping point where suddenly money will flow when people realize, wait a minute, you want to give me access to millions of people who don't live in the 12 largest metropolitan areas of the United States? That would be awesome.
I would like you to sell them things.
Did you say increased revenue? Now very I will. Cool.
All righty. Well, sadly, this comes to the end of the first episode of the Killin' It podcast for 2021.
Here's to many more.
If you like it, share it, tell your friends, give it a thumbs up, all that happy stuff. And that will do it for episode 93 of the Killin' It
Killin' It
podcast. Ooh.